Hi Ron, welcome to the show.
Hey Randy, thanks for having me, et un grand bonjour à tous mes amis, toutes mes amies à l'Université d'Ottawa.
Where are you from, Ron?
Well Randy, I'm exactly from Toronto. Born here and always lived here, except for my 3 years in Ottawa at the U of O.
How long have you been playing the piano?
I've been playing piano since I was 8, so going on 40 years now. There was a period of time when I took a break. As you know, I've had other lives as a lawyer and a French professor, and for about almost 10 of those years I didn't play, but coming on 10 years ago, now I came back and been playing ever since.
What first attracted you to the piano?
I'm not sure what first attracted me to the piano. I know I was attracted to the piano, and not to any other instrument. I'd say this, though, that I think every pianist has a bit of a multitasking mind, and I don't know if I had HADD when I was a kid, but maybe I did. And the piano appealed to me, I guess, because you have to do so much to play piano. You got the left hand, you got the right hand, you got the melody, you got the harmonies, you got the counterpoint, and that's all going at once. And it's trite but obvious to say that it's the only instrument where you have that. Yes, you do play multiple parts on the guitar, but nothing's like the piano. It's the orchestra in a box, the original orchestra in a box before computers. So I'm guessing that has something to do with it.
Now, you have a deep affection for the music of Art Tatum. What is it about him that you admire so much?
Art Tatum, what is it about his playing I don't love so much? Let me start off by saying that I think every artist has a guru, and as often as not, it doesn't have to do with any specific characteristic of the guru. It's more of a gestalt. And I think in Art Tatum's case, that's what works for me. It's everything about him. His time, his harmonies, his ability to combine disparate feelings into one song and make it seem like a seamless whole. Needless to say, his incredible technique and his use of technique. He's not always turning it on. He uses technique when needed, and there's an art to that in itself. Most of what you hear in an Art Tatum song, you could do anyone with, basic conservatory technique could do on their own. And what's great about Art Tatum is that he does have it and uses it when it's musically effective, but also he just focuses on the music. I also like his sense of adventurousness, which even today still sounds bold, a full 70 years after he burst onto the scene. His harmonies sound modern. And I mentioned time. It's his sense of pulse that really is inimitable. When you hear an Art Tatum song, it carries you along on this pulse. Even though he may be playing fast or slow, there's still an underlying feel that he maintains. And it's all solo piano, no bass, no drums to help him out. So I better stop talking about him because I could go on and on and on.
Who have been the most influential musicians when it comes to your playing?
The most influential musicians on my playing, well, I already spoke about Art Tatum. There's Oscar Peterson, there's Thelonious Monk. There is Lester Young. And I'd say also classical. Glenn Gould is a huge influence. Vladimir Horowitz. Marc-André Amelin. Martha Argerich. Yeah, I think I would take it there. Willie DeLion-Smith gets a special mention, even though he's a stride player and I don't. But again, just his spirit and approach to music is something I've always admired.
Now, you've studied at the Royal Conservatory in Toronto. What was that experience like for you, Ron?
I studied both piano and theory at the Royal Conservatory, and what was the experience like? It was good. I learned a lot. I certainly never got caught up in shall I say the mentality that it, where the method, you know, the technicalities of music, the theoretical technicalities of music, and the formalities of classical music overtake the actual music of music. I never got caught up in that. I have noticed that in some situations at the Royal Conservatory. But most importantly, my last piano teacher at the Conservatory, Margaret Parsons Poole, was good enough to realize that I had more of an aptitude for jazz. So she was the one who sent me on to my great piano teacher, Darwin Aiken, who had very advanced classical and very advanced jazz training. Now, when I say very advanced, he had studied with one of the greatest classical teachers and pianists in the United States, David Saperton, and for advanced jazz, he'd studied with Oscar Peterson. So that I got to because of my experience at the Royal Conservatory. So two thumbs up for the con, as we call it.
Darwin really left a lasting impression on you, didn't he?
He was a child prodigy as a pianist. He had great ability in classical music, and he early on went to study with a man who I've already mentioned, David Saperton. And to classical piano fans, they'll either know David Saperton as the first American to ever record the Chopin Etudes and the first person to ever record not the first person, but the first American, I guess, to ever record Chopin Godovsky. And Leopold Godovsky was his father-in-law. And again, that will mean something to you if you're a classical pianist fan. But Darwin also studied with Oscar Peterson and was able to go back and forth between jazz and classical and just brilliantly. He's also a great teacher. And the proof of how great a teacher he was is that I studied with him, George Gallus studied with him, Nancy Walker studied with him, Tom Cesniak studied with him, Gary Williamson studied with him, and I could keep rattling off the piano players who studied with Darwin. And each one of us is entirely different. There was no cookie-cutter result from what Darwin did. He had an ability to bring out in each student what each student had in themselves rather than imposing on them what he thought was right. Certainly in my own case, and I know in other people's, other pianists' cases, he influenced the playing by introducing a healthy measure of classical music, if only for technique. We played Debussy and Cacciatorian and Chopin, of course, but always with a view to achieving in jazz. And I do find with some of the jazz pianists today that they don't know classical, and they haven't done advanced technical work. Not everyone, but there are some cases. And Darwin did focus on that. And I think ultimately what it did, it gave us a very broad musical scope and universe that we would not have otherwise got. Of course, the great tragedy with Darwin is that he died early. He was in his early 40s, and this was in the early 1980s that he passed away, and we miss him. But before there were jazz programs, there was Darwin Aiken, and I think the Canadian jazz scene does owe him a debt of gratitude for the people he ushered into the art scene and who are now prominent members of that scene. So I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about Darwin, Randy. Thanks.
Ron, why don't you talk a little bit about Oscar Peterson?
Yeah, Oscar Peterson. Yeah, he's not too shabby, is he? Well, Oscar, I mean, Oscar invented sounds, he invented feels that now form a fundamental part of the jazz fabric, not only in Canada, but in the world. He did things in a way that we all try and do. He really made the music accessible to people and joyous. One of the reasons he's so popular is because people really enjoy listening to his music. Sounds simplistic, but it's true. There are other popular musicians that people don't listen to. A lot of everyone knows Beethoven, but a lot of people don't listen to him. I love Beethoven, but Oscar's legacy is one of great sounds and great approaches and great ideas, and I think I could quote Joe Seeley on this, at a tribute to Oscar Peterson. He said, "Oscar, on behalf of all the pianists in the world, I want to thank you so much for raising the bar so high that all we have to do is just walk under it."
You know, I've asked many other musicians this question, and some of them get stumped, and some of them right away can think of recordings that they've admired over the years. What I'd like to ask you, Ron, is what are your 10 favorite jazz recordings of all time?
Okay, well, I think my favorite jazz recording of all time is, if you can believe it, a stride piano duet between Willie the Lion Smith and Don Ewell. It's called Grand Piano. It's just been reissued on the Sackville label. But it was originally recorded in the 1960s in Toronto, where Don Ewell and Willie the Lion Smith had a residency for about 2 years. Oh man, I could just go on about this album. It's how it captures the spontaneity, the spirit, the collaboration, the feel, and it has this wonderful drive that has never left me. A Love Supreme, I don't think I need to go on at length about that one. Kinda Blue, I don't think I need to go on about that one. John McLaughlin's Explorations, is a real great inspiration to me. Just because it is an exploration and just so wonderfully done. Everything by Take Six. Now, I don't know if you consider them jazz, but I would. Anything they've done, anything, any single piece, is so full of musicality, of genius. Jazz, gospel, classical, R&B, hip-hop. It's all in there, and they're gods to me. I would argue that they are jazz, if only for their brilliant openness to what our usual jazz feels, but that they then mix up with other elements, you know, with and of course it's a cappella. They're an a cappella group. Okay, that's a whole show into itself that I'll. Or unto itself that I'll have to do one day. There's got to be some Oscar Peterson there. I would say maybe his solo instrument, his solo recording, my favorite instrument, which he did in Germany. That was his first solo recording, even though it was done in the 60s, and that certainly opened my eyes. And also, let's say, live at Stratford, or actually his concert recordings from the kind of from the mid 50s with the trio with Herb Ellis and Ray Brown, any one of those would be huge influences. Phineas Newborn, A World of Piano, has to be on this list for me too. Phineas Rufinus is just underrecognized, brilliant pianist. Had a bit of a tragic life, and really should be better remembered. I know there are pianists out there who do carry on his memory. Mulgrew Miller, Jeff Keyser all speak regularly about Phineas Newborn. Some Canadian content. Bernie Senensky's first, I think it's his first LP, New Life, and I think that's the name of it, as far as I know, hasn't been reissued. It came out in the 70s, was a big influence on me as well. I think I'll stop there, but just one proviso. Over the past few years, I haven't done a lot of listening. I do listen to classical music a lot, but I haven't listened much to jazz. I know Sonny Rollins does the same, and he says he doesn't listen to jazz because it's too much information. And that's the way I feel as I try and explore and find my own way. So I'm sure there's some incredible Canadian stuff out there. I mean, I've certainly heard, you know, David Braid and Lila Bielli and Rich Underhill's work, and it certainly sticks with me, as do many other musicians. It's just a hole in my listening universe at the moment.
Do you remember your first performance as a professional?
Yeah, I do remember the first performance I gave as a professional. It was at the Groaning Board restaurant, kind of one of the early, I guess you can call it hippie restaurants in Toronto, run by a man named David Stinson, who has now gone on to be one of the big condo developers in the city. So I know that about says it all. It wasn't a very illustrious evening, but we all have to start somewhere, and whatever got me to where I am today is something I have to be grateful for.
When it comes to concerts, Ron, what was the most inspiring performance that you've ever seen?
The most inspiring concert I ever attended was a Take Six concert. It's a cross between Take Six and Bobby McFerrin. And by the way, if I had to add one more jazz recording to my list, it would be pretty much anything by Bobby McFerrin. He's up there with Take Six with me. But I think Take Six, not only for what they bring to the stage in performance, but what they're able to do musically and harmonically and just from an execution point of view is something I still really don't fully grasp.
Did you listen to a lot of music when you were growing up, Ron?
I did listen to a lot of music. I was a kid in the 60s, so I listened to a lot of Beatles and I didn't listen to the Stones, but I listened to Love and Spoonful and a lot of R&B, Little Stevie Wonder were favorites. I got hooked on James Taylor. I'd say James Taylor and Stevie Wonder were two of the big ones for me back then. Then in my early teens, I got into jazz and classical, and the jazz began with ragtime and then stride piano. So Fats Waller was a big one, along with Willie the Lion. And then I discovered Art Tatum. Classical, I listened to a lot of Bach, a lot of Chopin. I listened to a lot of Mozart, but I have to admit that back then I didn't realize I don't like Mozart. Now I realize it, so I don't listen to a lot of Mozart. But it was pretty eclectic. I stopped listening to pop in about 1975, so I can't talk about any pop up until about 2000, when I kind of opened my ears again, which gets embarrassing sometimes. But one day when you want to try and stump me, throw me some names of bands from the 80s and you'll see that big question mark on my face. And, well, be gentle with me and be forgiving.
Do you ever find time to do any practicing?
I don't practice a lot. I practice. I used to practice 4, 6, 8, 10 hours a day when I was in my teens. Now I try and get an hour or two. Some days I don't practice at all. Sometimes just 20 minutes. It's much more of a quality thing rather than a quantity thing. But a practicing regimen is very personal, and everybody has their own approach, so don't judge by me.
You recently performed in and around Indonesia.
Indonesia was amazing. Indonesia, as people probably know, is a series of thousands of islands. It's a huge geographical expanse. I mean, there are only several big islands. Many of the islands are teeny. But there's the island of Bali, there's the island of Java, and there are others, but we were on Bali and Java. And it's like Canada, not only in that it's geographically huge, but it's multicultural beyond anything we can imagine. Indonesia is made up of thousands, or at least hundreds, of different cultures. Sundanese, Javanese, Sulawesian, Aceh, there's Hindu, there's Muslim. It's just huge diversity, and it makes it a fertile territory for jazz, because jazz is a multicultural music. It's made up of so many different influences. Indonesia is profoundly musical. Each of the cultures has its own music, and it's very refined. We have a lot of historical longevity in the music. So it's there are kind of practices and meanings and symbols in the music, not unlike Indian music, but Indonesian music is much less known. So to go there and have these old traditions and these different styles, and then bring jazz to it, was just amazing. The people were very receptive, and we found amazing players there, especially some really young ones who could do everything we could do, and then they could add all the different Indonesian music to boot. Incredible experience. I recommend it to everybody.
Okay, Ron, let's have some fun. I'd like to ask you, if you had a chance to form a dream band, who would it consist of? And what piece of music would you perform with that band?
Oh, Randy, you know how I'm going to answer this one. If I had to form a dream band, it would be my current quintet. I'm not putting you on. Ted Warren on drums, Mike Downs on bass, Sasha Boychuk on reeds, and Rich Underhill. And what music would I perform? Well, you know, probably one of the pieces I wrote for them. I do believe that. I don't believe there's a band out there I'd, you know, rather play with. Would it be fun to play with Ray Brown? Yeah, but would it be a good fit? I'm not sure. So I hope you don't see that as a cop-out, but I honestly mean that I have my dream band.
What are your views on the state of jazz in Canada as it stands at the moment?
The state of jazz in Canada, I think, is amazing as far as I know it. I think we're going through a golden age. I think right now the center of that golden age is Toronto, but that could change. Montreal is up to some real interesting stuff. But it hardly matters which metropolitan center it is. There's an interest in jazz. There are great players. There are jazz programs that allow people to enter into jazz. There are always complaints in the arts. Musicians would like to make more money. We'd like to see more support from labels. But the music business is an extremely difficult music business. So the state of jazz, I think, overall is strong, but we should never take it for granted. I think it's important for players to continue exploring and not to become rigid and ossified, but to be open to new directions and new sounds. And I think it behooves the listeners, lovers of jazz, to get out and support the music and correspond with jazz players like me, and let us know you're out there and ask us questions, and we'll go on for a long time. Jack Chambers, the writer, recently told me that for him, it's over the past, I believe, 5 years, he said that he's been able to speak of Toronto as a true international jazz city, not just a good jazz city. So I think we've taken a place of pride at the front of the line. That's not only Toronto, it's all of Canada.
Talk a little about your trio, Ron. How did that musical entity come about?
My trio came together slowly. I came back to music after having been away from it about 10 years ago, and I met people, and I played with some people and heard about other people, and then I played with some of the people I heard about, and through them I heard about other people, and ultimately I found Ted and Mike, and it's a great match. And Ted Warren and Mike Downs, Ted on drums, Mike on bass, have their own history. They've known each other for 23 years. They studied together, so playing with them is like playing in a well, it's like having a, maybe I shouldn't use this analogy, but I mean it in the best sense. It's like having a team of horses who know the exact way to go and are move in lockstep and are reliable and just great to be with. So not that Ted and Mike are horses, but and they don't play war horses and they're not workhorses of any type, but they are just a great pair of guys that took me about 9 years to find, but now that I found them, not letting them go.
Do you have a preference when it comes to musical setting? For example, do you prefer performing solo, a duo, trio, orchestral, or whatever?
I don't have a major preference about musical setting. I'm less interested in solo work these days, but really everything is kind of interesting to me. Solo, duo, trio, group. But I do love playing in a trio setting, and it's compact and portable, so maybe there's a little bit of a tendency towards that.
If you had only one musician that you were able to perform with and even record with, who would that person be?
Well, I can't really answer that question. I can't imagine having only one musician to perform or record with. Realistically, I suppose that I'd want Mike, my bass player. But maybe I'll approach it this way. I'm going to say Bobby McFerrin. Now, I don't know if my style of playing and Bobby's would fit together. I've never had the opportunity to play with Bobby. But Bobby's music and his approach to music are inspiring to me and just wonders to behold. So I'd certainly love the opportunity, and I'd only hope it would work. But that is part of the mystique of music, which is what makes music interesting.
Do you find that your music has helped you in your law practice? What I'm trying to get at, Ron, is whether there's any musical concepts or ideas that you may have utilized while you were studying and even practicing law.
Well, now, as far as my law practice goes, I don't really have one anymore. I stopped being a lawyer 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and I wasn't even a full-time lawyer for like 20 years. I became a lawyer in 1984, and in 1986 I stopped doing it full time. So the law practice has always been a bit tenuous. But my musical experiences, conceptually, no, I don't feel a direct relation between the music and the law. What I do feel, though, is that in music I've had to stay more grounded and open to ideas and not jump too quickly to judgments. And say, in doing that, when I was doing law, it did kind of ground me a bit. How I approached a problem once I came back to music, how I approached a legal problem once I came back to music, was influenced in how I would try and approach it from all sides and let itself kind of percolate rather than jump all over it and rush to some quick sort of conclusion. And I think that's something I learned in jazz, you know, the exploratory nature of jazz, trying to improvise. But beyond that, I wouldn't say there was a strict correlation. And now, of course, I'm not a lawyer, so I can just focus on the music.
Let's talk a little about your album, Shimmering Rhythm. You know, the first time I heard this album, I was captivated by the sense of joy and spirit that was going down during the session. I'd like to hear what your thoughts are on this, Ron.
Well, thanks, man. Well, Shimmering Rhythm was a blast to record. I had a good sense ahead of time of what I wanted the recording to sound like, in all recordings, I like to leave little to the imagination. Let's say we came with the loaf of bread three quarters baked, and we took it into the oven of the studio and finished it there. And in doing that, you're absolutely right. Everyone did have fun making the recording. It was, you know, it was work, but it was fun work. Certainly brought out a great deal of energy in all of us that we then channeled back into moving what we had been playing up to the next level, so that we were improving as we recorded in the studio. And not that we were in there for so long, it was just 2.5 days. That's a tribute to the musicality of all the people involved, that they were able to pull it off in such a short time. But absolutely, it was great fun.
Do you have a favorite piece from this album, Ron?
Well, you know, like a parent, I love all my children equally. But secretly, I do have a favorite piece, and it's the first piece that I was able to work on with Tanya Gill, the brilliant arranger for Shimmering Rhythm. It's the classical piece, Rosie Medra. I just think it's a beautiful piece of music. It's a Welsh hymn, and the English classical composer, Ray Vaughan Williams, 20th century composer, took the Welsh hymn and built a beautiful melody around it. And I think it's a melody of great beauty, and the likes of which I've never heard. Maybe even the most beautiful piece of music I ever heard. Certainly one of the most beautiful pieces of music I ever heard. So, that's probably my favorite track, and why I chose it, but my answer could be different tomorrow.
Do you have time to do any teaching? Do you have any students or teach in schools or whatever?
I don't do a lot of teaching. I'm not a teacher of music. I'm too busy learning myself. That's the way I feel. But that being said, I'm always happy to hang out with younger players and share whatever I can with them. But invariably, I learn as much from them as they learn from me. I suppose that's the hallmark of good teaching. But I do leave it to people I think far more qualified than me.
Do you find it challenging, Ron, finding work, like finding gigs to play, perform at, concerts, festivals?
It's always a challenge to find work. Not only that, sometimes you find work and there's a lot of work for one day and then no work for the 10 days preceding or following that one day. But you know what? It's like that in any business. If you're selling milk, or you're building airplanes or computers or whatever it is you do, finding work is a challenge, unless it isn't. There's no challenge for Diana Krall in finding work, but I think the work is there, and I'm grateful enough to not complain in any way. When you do the business of music, then you get to do the music of music. So I just make calls and respond to calls when people call me to hire me, and I'm happy that it's there.
With everything that you have going, do you find that your other activities and impede on your music at all?
If I was still doing law, I think it would impede my music. I haven't been teaching. I was a French professor at U of T, but it was only part-time between 93 and 98. I was an assistant prof. So that's not an impediment in any way. And, because I don't do law, that's not an impediment. I still do some legal writing sometimes just to help generate a bit of extra revenue. I'll do some ghost writing. The way is pretty clear for me to pursue music, so I'm lucky that way. If anything, it's life that impedes in music when I have to look after this or that, but that's life, you know. And by and large, I get to do as much music as I want and can. So how lucky. Boy, the more I talk to you, Randy, the luckier I feel.
What are you listening to these days, Ron?
Well, as I said earlier, I'm not listening to much these days. I do listen to classical music a fair bit. Take Six is always interesting. There's a Quebec group, Bottine Souriante, who have been around for decades and just an amazing kind of traditional but very jazz-influenced group. So I think I'm a bit of a disappointment on this one, too. Not listening to much. I listen to a lot of news radio, CBC, BBC, French, Radio France, are on often. And podcasts. I'm a huge proponent of podcasts, and many of them have to do with tech or with French, what's going on in France, or movies. So I think I'm becoming a podcast nerd.
When it comes to composing music, who are your influences?
I have no main influence in composing. So many come to mind when I'm in the process of writing a song. It could be Chopin or Bach, and then it could be Thelonious Monk and Oscar Peterson. So really, everyone have been my influences. I often think of Duke Ellington, not because he influenced my composing, but just how he made so much with so little. He kept in a very tonal palette, but really just had brilliant ideas. Even simple songs like Mood Indigo, show me a certain way how to keep things simple. Not that I always do, but then again, I often find myself thinking about Brahms or as I said before, Chopin. So many influences. They're all my main influences.
So what's on tap for you, Ron, in 2006?
I will have my new recording, which I hope to release in the fall of 2006. It'll be called Tsubarashi Live. Tsubarashi is the Japanese word for great. And that also points to the fact that I'll be going to Japan on an arts fellowship for November and December of 2006 in order to play in Japan. No firm concerts or dates in Japan yet, but I hope to do a lot of playing there. We're playing at the Montreal Bistro in Toronto, as we always do, and I'm happy to say we'll be at the Ottawa Jazz Festival on June 23rd. At 6:30. I'll be there with my quintet playing music from Shimmering Rhythm. And, I'm hoping for great things with the new CD and that it will lead to a fair bit of touring and playing with my brilliant quintet, my dream band.
Ron, do you enjoy the recording process, the whole, not the trouble of going through it, but just the whole methodology of recording jazz and getting the music out there?
I do enjoy the recording process. It's really hard. I think that's what I enjoy about it. It's really quite grueling. It's because you're constantly listening to yourself and having your sound reflected to yourself, you're under a microscope, and it really forces you to make sure the details are in place. It's not enough to have kind of the general ideas anymore, and you can let things slip in concert because it goes by so quickly and no one notices it. But when you're recording something for posterity and it's permanent, every little move, every little breath, to quote Sting, every little note counts, every mistake, when it's etched in there forever, is how do I say, just monumental. So I love the focus that it brings, and it takes a huge, huge amount of energy, but a good recording session is always a session of great musical growth. So, bring it on. That's why I've done, I guess, 5 CDs in the past 5 years now, and look forward to doing many more.
Well, you know, Ron, I'd like to thank you so much for dropping by today and sharing some of your thoughts and ideas about music and just performing in general.
Thanks, Randy, and thanks to all my friends at U of O. I spent 3 very good years here at school. Et j'ai pas eu l'occasion de parler en français, mais étant une université bilingue, j'aimerais souhaiter un grand bonjour et à mes amis à l'Université d'Ottawa. J'espère que je pourrai jouer pour vous bientôt. I hope I can play for everyone in Ottawa and see people at U of O soon. So thanks again, Randy, for having me on, and thank you for playing the music and for keeping it alive and for bringing it to the public. All the musicians owe you a debt of gratitude for your work. You take care.